It's been a long, hot summer for Paul Ryan as the Speaker of the House tries to focus on his agenda amid nonstop drama from Donald Trump. Craig Gilbert reports. In Milwaukee, a new Department of Justice report on the police department finds that the department is undermining its own relationship with the community. Ashley Lutheran has the details. And is there finally a deal that could deliver a state budget? Patrick Marley tells us who's holding the cards in Madison. All that and more today from the best political team in Wisconsin on Politics. Well, good afternoon. I'm David Haynes, the opinions editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Welcome to On Politics for Thursday, August 31st. So Paul Ryan has been trying to push the Republican agenda this summer after the collapse of the health care reform debate in Congress earlier this year. We spoke with Craig Gilbert in Washington about how that effort's been going. So, Craig, welcome back to On Politics. Speaker Paul Ryan, House Speaker Paul Ryan, is due for a visit with the Journal Sentinel tomorrow, and I thought maybe we'd chat for a minute about how his summer has gone. After the collapse of health care reform, he's been promoting the idea of tax reform and other elements of the GOP agenda. How's that been going this summer?
Well, you know, the test will be in the coming weeks. I mean, tax reform is now the big test of his speakership and the big test of the Republican Congress after the failure of health care reform. Of course, he got health care through the House after a lot of pain, but it failed in the Senate, and there wasn't support certainly in the Senate for the bill he passed in the House. Tax reform is going to be a test, another test, and the biggest test yet of the Republicans' ability to govern, ability to agree on a policy and find a consensus and work with each other. They're clearly not going to be working with Democrats on this. And it comes with, obviously, under great political pressure and also with some other little minefields along the way. There's a debt ceiling showdown. There's a potential for a government shutdown showdown. The president has threatened to do that if he doesn't get funding for his border wall. And there's the looming issue of disaster relief for Texas. So there's a lot going on that, tax reform was already complicated. It remains to be seen how doable it is. They have a chance to do it, but it won't be easy for all sorts of reasons. But it's not the only problem and issue and challenge on their plate right now.
Well, and talk a bit about how the president has been playing into all this. It seems sometimes he's working at cross purposes with his own party. He's been talking about bringing back health care reform. Is there any chance of that happening this fall?
Well, there's always a shot. But again, when you consider all the reasons why it didn't happen in the first place, they had every political reason that they have now. They had all those reasons to do it earlier this summer when it failed. So it's not like the incentives are any greater and the problems are still there. So it's not. And in fact, they only got to second base on health care. In other words, even had they passed it in the Senate, there was no guarantee of negotiating a consensus bill between the Senate and the House. So they were more than one step away from health care reform. You know, the fundamental problems remain. I mean, the president's not popular. That doesn't help his ability to use the bully pulpit. His relationships with even people in his own party in Congress have been complicated by his own scolding of Republican leaders. We've seen that again in recent weeks in the case of both Mitch McConnell in the Senate and Paul Ryan in the House. So all these fundamental problems remain. The controversies, continue. None of this makes it any easier to get these things done. And of course, Paul Ryan has chosen the tack of trying to work with the president and trying to play down and minimize his differences with the president amid, occasional criticism when he feels it's absolutely necessary to criticize. But the potential is always there for that relationship to kind of go awry as it did during the campaign when Paul Ryan was appointed critic of Donald Trump during the election cycle.
Now, the last time, we mentioned the flood relief for Southeast Texas, which has suffered devastating flooding in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. The last time there was a major bill after Superstorm Sandy, there were a lot of politics being played. Do you anticipate that that might happen again here?
Well, it's probably a little less likely, but for political reasons. I mean, what happened last time with Hurricane Sandy was it happened in an area of the country, the Northeast, which is a more Democratic area, even though some of the local governors and officials who were lobbying for aid were Republicans. And those Northeastern Republicans are still very bitter about the fact that they had trouble getting disaster relief and getting support from disaster relief from Republicans in other parts of the country, including Texas, which is now seeking relief. So last time you had, you know, conservative Republicans in Congress, some of whom refused to get behind disaster relief under a Democratic president in a Democratic part of the country. Now, those ingredients have changed. This time around, you have a Republican president, you have Republican control of Congress, and you have a red instead of a blue part of the country where you have dominated by Republican conservatives in Congress who were also clamoring for that aid now. So I wouldn't expect, if anything, the politics is easier to get this done. But you have a lot of bad feeling left over from Sandy about the way this issue was handled. Last time, Governor Christie of New Jersey, Republican Governor Christie, has been very outspoken in his criticism, for example, of Ted Cruz, the Republican senator of Texas, accusing him of hypocrisy by opposing the aid for Sandy and then clamoring for aid in Texas.
All right, Craig Gilbert in Washington, thanks so much.
All right.
And now I want to go to Patrick Marley in Madison. Patrick, I'd like to talk about the state budget and where we're at on that and Foxconn, but you have some breaking news this morning on Lincoln Hills. What's going on?
That's right. The leader of Lincoln Hills is Wendy Peterson. She's been the superintendent there for the last year and a half or so. She announced, or the department announced today, that she will be stepping down, going back to her previous position she held a couple years ago as education director for Lincoln Hills. This is a significant change. The superintendent is the leader of the prison. Of course, the place has been in a lot of turmoil in recent years. There's an FBI investigation for child abuse and child neglect, prisoner abuse. There are five, at least, lawsuits. A federal judge recently ordered some significant changes in the use of solitary confinement and restraints at the prison, and specifically questioned how Wendy Peterson could have been put in charge of this place, noting that she has little experience with juvenile corrections at all, and that experience that she does have is at Lincoln Hills, which he views as a very troubled institution. The prison officials are saying that she requested this change. She wanted to spend more time with her family. She's going back to this lower-level position. They'll move up the deputy superintendent for the time being while they search for a permanent replacement.
So it's likely there will be a search for a replacement that won't be permanent then.
Yeah, I mean, presumably the deputy could seek to become the permanent replacement, but they will do a full-fledged recruitment to find someone to lead the place.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that. So let's turn to the state budget. Where are we at this point? Is there sort of a timetable for getting the budget done now?
Yeah, it looks like things that have been stalled for a couple of months are now moving into high gear. They hope to have the Joint Finance Committee starting Tuesday and then maybe another day next week. But their goal is to get it done with the Budget Committee. Very likely that the Foxconn legislation could also move through the committee next week. Mm-hmm. And then the following week, leaders say they hope to have both things passed through both houses.
And does that mean there's a deal on transportation?
Well, that's a little unclear. When they say they are moving toward a deal and speak optimistically about how things are going, but anytime we try to get specifics from them, they decline to tell us what those are. So I think they're moving toward something. I don't think all the details have been worked out, but they seem to be pretty optimistic that they can really get this through the Budget Committee next week.
All right. So through the Budget Committee and on Foxconn in particular, when might it go before the state Senate?
Well, I think that the week of the 11th, which would be the week after next, it could go that week. That's their goal. And then I don't know if the Assembly would take it up that week or the following week. They need to get it done by the end of September under their agreement with Foxconn, the memorandum of understanding they have with them.
All right. Patrick Marley in Madison, thanks so much.
Thank you, David.
And now I want to move to an interview I did yesterday with Ashley Lutheran about a new Department of Justice draft report about the Milwaukee Police Department. Here's that report. So, Ashley, welcome to On Politics. Refresh our memories on this story. The Department of Justice has been doing this review of the police department. What's the history there? How did that get started, and what does the draft report that you got your hands on show?
So the history of this whole review begins with Milwaukee Police Chief Edward Flynn requesting the federal government review the department, all aspects of it, in what's known as a collaborative reform initiative. He made this request in November 2015. He made it on the same day that federal prosecutors decided not to charge the now-fired officer who shot and killed Dontre Hamilton in Red Arrow Park.
This came in the wake of the Dontre Hamilton shooting.
It did, okay. Indeed. Yeah. And at the time, Chief Flynn said, I understand there are many in the community who still won't accept my assertions or my my perspective that this is a top-notch professional police department, and so let's have the federal government come in and take a thorough review and see what they say.
Okay, so you got your hands on a draft report that sounds like it was written sometime last year.
Yes.
And the police department, while they didn't speak with you directly, issued a statement that essentially said, well, we've been doing some other stuff in the meantime. So walk me through what the report sort of in summary says and what they say they've been doing to address that.
Sure, and I'll just take one step back. So in sure. all of this time, there hasn't really been any indication from the Federal Department of Justice as to when a final report would be released. They originally estimated what they call an initial assessment would be out in January, so that was 8 months ago.
Right.
That has led to calls from some aldermen and also many community members for at least the drafts to be released, because then there would at least be something, some results, some information out mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. Now, from the police department's perspective, that is, you know, they don't agree with that because this is a collaborative process. So it appears that the draft is possibly the initial draft. We're not entirely sure. And the department would have responded to those particular concerns, and they did make very clear, the department did, that they believe this draft has inaccuracies in terms of the content as well. Some of that content includes assessments on community policing, traffic stops, internal affairs and discipline, how officers accused of misconduct are identified, and how those types of investigations are undertaken within the department. I think one of the key concerns is about the possible, at least from this draft report, something federal authorities identified was possibly an over-reliance on data within mm-hmm. the department, possibly coming at the expense of community relations. Not saying that the use of data is wrong, just saying that it may be having unintended consequences.
Right, and they're saying that even beat cops sometimes can't identify or can't define what it means to do community policing. So
yes.
there appears to be a lack of at least acknowledgement that that's what the chief wants.
And in many cases, this is something, well, first of all, this is something Chief Flynn has maintained throughout. There have been community conversations and outside speakers brought into the city to discuss community policing and problem-orienting policing. The chief has always maintained the department mm-hmm. does do that. According to some of these interviews with officers, at least contained in the draft report, their understanding is that that type of policing is done only by certain members of the department, and that it's not necessarily, in their view, a holistic department-wide policy. I'm sure the chief would disagree with that, but that is what was contained within the draft report.
Talk about traffic stops, because that's a particular focus here in this draft report, at least. What's it say about how MPD is handling stops?
So the traffic stop issue comes up, and it appears to show, you know, racial disparities within the traffic stops made by the department. Again, this is something that's come up throughout the years. It's been a common criticism or concern that people have with MPD strategy. The chief has always said, you know, officers are going where there are crime hotspots. They're going where crime is occurring. So sometimes those areas tend to be overlaid with poverty, historic segregation, other social problems. So, and he points out there are very huge disparities in victimization within the city as well. Mm-hmm. So that's how he's explained that before. I think there's still a concern, though, that and if you read the draft report, there's a concern that who is being stopped, for what reason, how are residents internalizing that interaction with officers. And sometimes it's good, but sometimes people feel like they're being hassled.
Yeah, and it certainly has an effect on how the community feels
right.
about how the police are doing their jobs. One final question. This is the draft report.
Yes.
When are we going to see a final report? Are we ever going to see a final report?
Those are really good questions. We don't know. The Justice Department is currently reviewing all aspects of what it does, including this collaborative reform process. We've asked the Justice Department about the status of the report, and all we've been told is that that review of everything, including collaborative reform, is ongoing. The report, according to the Justice Department, is not done. Presumably, there's an updated version that may be available at some point, but it's unclear when or if ever it would be released to the public.
All right, Ashley, thanks so much.
Thanks.
And now I'm joined back in studio in Milwaukee with Bill Glauber, reporter for the Journal Sentinel, and Dan Bice, a columnist for the Journal Sentinel. And it's time for winners and losers.
Our favorite time.
Dan, why don't you go first? Who's your winner this week?
My winner this week is a slow week before Labor Day. It is Mark Green, former U.S. rep, former state representative. He's been a very low-key position for a while, but he's now been named head of foreign aid for the Trump administration. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever had to deal with in all my years of dealing with lots of legislators and lawmakers and so forth, and now he gets a position not in the middle of the tornado of the Trump administration.
Far, far away from
it. Yeah, so, but it's a good position for Mark to be in.
And he said he sort of likes being in the cheap seats, right?
Yeah, that's right.
At this point.
So
who's your loser?
My loser this week is actually what Ashley was just talking about. It's Ed Flynn, who came here as a reformer. And after nearly 10 years, it looks like there's still a lot of reforming to be done at the police department. He's came in saying that he would be someone focused very much on data, and he has been. But it looks like a number of things have been overlooked as a result of that focus on that data-driven approach to policing.
Yeah, at least the draft report, and as Ashley pointed out, who knows what the final report, if it ever comes out, might say, but at least the draft report indicates that they were so focused on data that they might be overlooking forming relationships in the community.
Right, and there was also the sense that there should be a quota in terms of the number of stops.
Yeah.
There's racial disparities, which apparently didn't get picked up in their own data observation and so forth. So, it's not good news for him. And my guess is the final report will be much less significant than the draft report because this is out now and people are already starting to respond to this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bill, who's your loser of the week?
Well, Paul Manafort, remember him? He ran the Trump campaign for a while. He's been wrapped up in this probe on potential collusion, and Politico reported that not just special counsel Robert Mueller, but the New York Attorney General has joined the investigation. The importance of that is that with the pardon power, Trump can pardon on federal charges, but not on state charges. This is really a shot across the bow. At everybody. You don't want to be in the crosshairs of one prosecutor, let alone two.
Actually, and now the Wall Street Journal reported this week that they're looking at money laundering as well for Paul Manafort. So, yeah, and they've done subpoenas against his spokesman, his attorneys, just about everybody who has any sort of business
with him.
You
don't normally hear of subpoenas against attorneys
this. That's highly unusual.
It's very unusual.
Yeah, and he had a lot of business in Eastern Europe, in Ukraine.
He had business with supposedly some dubious characters.
Yeah. He's actually been doing that sort of business with other nations and people involved in other governments for a long time. This is just the most recent development of that. So,
there's been speculation all along that maybe they're putting pressure on him to try to get him to talk about other deals.
Well, that's speculation. We don't know. All I know is I don't want one prosecutor after me, let alone two.
And if Paul Manafort calls you, do not return the call.
So, Bill, who's your winner this week?
In a dreadful week for the city of Houston with the flooding that's taken place down there, it's the people of the city of Houston have really, through grit and grace, survived this. Obviously, many, many weeks, months, and years of rebuilding await that city. But the people of Houston have kept their cool, kept their nerve, along with first responders and the police and people from out of town and the charities. It's just the beginning, but they've gotten through this first worst burst about as well as you can. I think the death toll is more than 30 right now from the storm. It will probably be higher, hopefully not a lot higher, but we don't know. They've done good. The charities have done well, including one by J.J. Watt from Pewaukee, the football player with the Houston franchise. He's raised more than $10 million through his for his foundation that he says will then serve the people of Houston. So, you know, it's really what the country looks like in terms of Houston, in terms of rallying together. It's what we like to think of ourselves in a very and it's a very divided period, but for a week at least, people have come together in really a bid of survival.
So we're talking about winners and losers. How do you think Donald Trump has handled this? This is his first major disaster that he's had to handle.
Well, I think he hasn't gotten, you know, the visual of it, you know, of Trump really not going to the scene, of not...
Which they advised against,
which was fine. But then once he went there, not really expressing any empathy about those who were injured. He did so yesterday. The one piece of good news for him is the government is seemingly working, unlike in Katrina, where right. It was a complete failure of government.
I was going to bring that up. There does appear to be good coordination, unlike Katrina, between state, federal, and local officials.
But, you know, there's not enough help.
It's early,
and it's early. And, you know, you've had volunteers, these, you know, Cajun Navy guys with, you know, flatbed boats just coming in to rescue people.
The Red Cross from Mexico showed up. So they're helping out. So, yeah, it's a lot of people. You know, Trump has a hard time not seeing everything in terms of this winners-losers framework. He has that for just about everything. And it's hard to go to a situation where there are no winners. I mean, you said they're the winners, but there are no winners here. This is a horrible storm. Storm hung over the area and made things even worse. We had Katrina. We didn't deal very well with that at first. Instead of saying, wow, look how great this crowd is today, which was his initial response to the situation, the initial response, you know, should be something about how terrible this is, and we're going to do what we can to pull you out of this.
And there are tough decisions to be made in Houston. I mean, it's a city built without zoning, built apparently in a pretty large floodplain, and, you know, all that concrete. You have, you know, people don't want to admit it. You have the issue of global warming that's taking place with these storms.
You have a governor who doesn't want to admit that there.
And you're going to have to rebuild a city in which I think 8 of 10 homeowners didn't have flood insurance. I mean, this is a catastrophic tragedy for Houston, not in terms of loss of life, although each loss of life is a personal catastrophe. It's a citywide catastrophe. They have to rebuild. I think 30% of America's fourth largest city was underwater.
I did think the attention given to Melania's footwear was a little bit ridiculous.
I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah. For me, it contrasted years ago when I was in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in 1982. The city suffered a devastating flood, and President Reagan came for a visit. And you can say what you want, but it lifted the city's spirits. He came, he threw a few sandbags, he got the photo op I'm sure his political types wanted, but it made a difference. I can understand Trump not wanting to go to Houston this time and causing problems, but there's a balance there. Now, he's probably coming back.
I think Saturday is what they sound like. He's either going to Texas or Louisiana.
There was a contrast.
In fairness to him, there was no reason for him to be in Houston that day. Let's be clear.
Sort of getting in the way.
He would have gotten in the way.
And, you know, Bush dealt well with one situation and not with another. With 9/11, he got right in there, climbs up on top of the rubble, grabs the bullhorn, and, you know, did what everyone... I mean, his approval rating ran right up to the 90s or whatever then, as opposed to, you know, what happened with Katrina. But,
I mean, aside from the visuals, what we are seeing is the government is working, and that's probably the most important part.
That's probably
way more important.
I mean, important. The number of people rescued is stunning. I mean, we're more than 100,000 people who've been rescued. It's just amazing.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to viewer questions. We've got time for one. And one of our viewers wants to know, so when are the Democrats going to say something against Antifa? This is the anti-fascist movement that showed up at some of the white supremacist rallies. They made such a big deal about Donald Trump in Charlottesville. Who wants to grab that?
Actually, somebody already has. Nancy Pelosi already spoke out against Antifa just recently. And in fact, it wasn't until she spoke out that Paul Ryan's spokeswoman, Ashley Strong, spoke out about Antifa yesterday, I believe it was. So,
to be blunt, they're not the same. I mean, Antifa and white supremacist movement, they're not the same. Now, if Antifa grows, if this anti-fascist movement grows, yes, it needs to be stopped. But to liken the two groups, neo-Nazis, Antifa, is I'm sorry, it's just not the same.
Yeah, they're not the same, although...
But you don't want to, and I'm not condoning anybody putting down somebody's right to speech.
Well,
no
and,
question
and
about
there,
that.
There has been some violence, too.
Yes,
right. That Antifa handbook that's out right now by the professor from, was it Brown? There's some troubling things about what he's written, sort of a justification for violence, making a number of comparisons between what's going on now and what happened in Nazi Germany in the 30s. I think those situations are not very parallel, so the justifications for violence aren't really necessary or aren't even legitimate. So I think there's room for criticism depending on exactly what they do. But
it shouldn't distract from the essential...
Right, from the essential issue that was raised. I mean, because there's an attempt to try to make those two on the same parallel, the white supremacists and Antifa. And they're
simply not.
Right.
I mean, people have to have a First Amendment right to speech. You can't shut people down, people's right to speech. You know, as horrific as the white supremacist speech would be, you know, if there's a permit, they have a right to do it.
Yeah. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Dan Bice and Bill Glauber, thanks for being with me. I'm Dave Haynes with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I also want to thank Craig Gilbert, Patrick Marley, and Ashley Lutheran, who contributed to today's program. Thanks for joining us on Politics.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.